Mark 5:21 to 43. And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live." And he went with him. And a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years, and who had suffered much under many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus, and came up behind him and all the crowd, and touched his garment. For she said, "If I touch even his garments, I will be made well." And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, there came from the ruler's house some who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." And he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. They came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when he had entered, he said to them, "Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. But he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, "Talitha kumi," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." And immediately the girl got up and began walking, for she was 12 years of age. And they were immediately overcome with amazement. And he strictly charged them that no one should know this, and told them to give her something to eat.
Well, I think as believers today, we are living in a time where we are continually being overwhelmed by social needs that are all around us, whether it be from sex trafficking, poverty, the enormous needs that are hitting us from, you know, just even this past week, hearing tragedy of mothers forsaking their babies. And it's very hard not to become overwhelmed and not to lose sight on making sure that our ministry does not become fully focused on trying to meet the need, but forgetting to minister to the whole person. And I think Mark gives us two examples here in this passage, how Jesus ministered compassionately, but also, should we say, if I could use the word holistically. And Mark's going to show three ways that Jesus remained focused on ministering in a way that met the needs compassionately, but also honored his Father. The first one you'll see there is that Jesus' ministry was people-focused, but not people-driven. Jesus was very different from the religious leaders of his time, and the main reason why he was so different from the religious leaders of his time was that he created huge crowds wherever he went. Wherever he went, there was sure to be a crowd that followed. And this was so noticeable that in John chapter 3, we are told that John's disciples, John the Baptist, that is, his disciples, they were alarmed by the fact that their rabbi, John the Baptist, was losing the people that he had attracted through his ministry, and they were all going to Jesus. And they weren't sure that John was aware of it, so they came to John and just said, "Hey, I don't know if you know this, Rabbi, but everyone is going to Jesus." And And throughout the Gospels, we are seeing that wherever Jesus went, there was a crowd. He'd come into town, and if they stayed in a house, it wasn't long until the crowds gathered outside, or sometimes if he was inside and people wanted to get in desperately, we are told even of an incident where they dug a hole into the roof to get into Jesus, to get to hear him and to see him. And Jesus, when he taught by the Sea of Galilee, he would get in a boat, and he'd get in a boat to not just for acoustic sake, but just because there was people so much were gathering around him. And although Jesus' ministry was focused on ministering to people, no one would have ever accused Jesus of being a people pleaser. People would come up to Jesus and they'd say things like, "Jesus, I want to follow you." And no doubt that was, I'm sure that was exciting to Jesus' ministry, to his disciples. Oh wow, another person wants to join with us. And you wonder if they didn't cringe when Jesus responded back to those, "Well, if you want to follow me, the foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." In other words, Jesus was saying, if you're just looking for a joyride, you don't want to follow me. And in Luke chapter 9, Luke tells us, Jesus said that if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. In Matthew 10:38, it's very similar. Jesus said, "And he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me." So Jesus was very people-focused, but he was not people-driven. Jesus could see into people's hearts, and if their desire was to live a life focused on themselves, then Jesus had no time for them. You know, I think living here in America, we get so used to, such friendly, smiley service. I love it. You go into Walmart, and if you need something, there's a friendly greeter there who, "Look, I'm trying to find dog food. Well, let me help." And I will just, and they just take you down there. And that's really helpful if you're, looking for something in Walmart. The danger is when we begin to think that Jesus is the same way, and we begin to think that, "Well, Jesus, your only purpose in existence is to serve me." Jesus is King of Kings. He's the Lord of Lords. And so Jesus took time to minister to people, but he took time to minister to those people whose hearts were truly opened and wanted to be transformed by him. And I find it very interesting in this passage that Mark tells us that Jesus was surrounded by people. He was surrounded by people. But there's only two people that actually wanted to receive ministry from Jesus that Jesus responded to here. Second, Jesus' ministry was compassionate, but his ministry was still gospel-driven. I think many years ago, evangelical Christians would have been accused of just wanting to make sure that they share the gospel, but not wanting to do anything as far as compassionate ministry goes. And I think today there is a movement that is moving in the opposite direction. They are seeking to be compassionate, but oftentimes at lip service give concern for people's eternal destination. But what I find very interesting here about Jesus is that he is concerned about both here. And throughout his ministry, he is concerned about both. Even Luke, in Luke's gospel, and I think it's very interesting that Luke highlights the fact that there was times where Jesus said, "No, we need to move on from here to another village to present the gospel because that's what I came for. And I say it's very interesting that Luke highlights that because remember, Luke was a trained physician. And so if there was anybody who was sensitive to the needs of people, it was Luke. And here, had Jesus just been content to be ministering to the physical health of this lady here that he responds to, he would have never have taken the time to respond to her the way he did. And I say that because as you think about this lady, you recognize that here is a lady who had incredible needs in her life. Not only did she have this discharge of blood for 12 years, which must have been physically exhausting and draining enough, but it's interesting that the term that Mark actually uses to describe her disease in verse 29 literally means torment. So this woman, this discharge of blood that this woman had experienced for 12 years was like a torment for her. And I think we can understand that. But it was more than just the discharge of blood that was going on here. According to Levitical law in Leviticus chapter 5, verse 19, that when a woman was in her monthly cycle and she had a flow of blood, she was considered unclean during that period of time and up to 7 days after that period. And when she was considered unclean, that meant that any bed that she laid on, any chair that she sat on, were both unclean. And anybody who sat or laid on the bed or the chair was also unclean. And that meant that they had to wash themselves before becoming clean. And so this wasn't just kind of a monthly cycle. This was going on for 12 years. And so we can understand the impact that this would have had on the family, assuming she had a family. Even if she didn't have a family, it would have meant that this is a woman who, if she came over to your house and she sat in your chair would be unclean. And if you came over to her house and you sat in her chair, you would be unclean. And so when we begin to understand the impact that this had on her socially and emotionally, and not only that, but according to the Jewish customs of that day, a woman who was unclean was not allowed to enter into the temple. So that meant spiritually, this woman was also cut off because she wasn't allowed to be in the temple area and to enjoy the festivities that would have been going on there. So spiritually, she was suffering. And so when we understand the impact that this disease was having upon her, we understand why she was trying desperately to find healing. And Mark tells us that she spent all she could on physical supposed attempts to heal her, and none of them had done anything for her. And according to Jewish Talmud, there were a number of different treatments that she could try, and every one of those would have cost her money. And so here is a woman who is physically drained, emotionally drained, socially drained, financially drained, and spiritually drained. And if Jesus was just interested in ministering to her compassionately, then he would have just allowed this woman to have been healed. The Father would not have called to his attention the fact that this woman was healed. I mean, imagine all of this stuff going on in your life, and now it's being called attention to publicly. because Jesus, for whatever reason, we have no idea why Jesus wasn't aware that who had touched him, but he knew. Obviously, the Father had revealed to him that power had gone out of him and healed somebody, but the Father hadn't told him who. And so we can imagine the humiliation that this woman felt, having her medical condition now become known to everybody. And so my point is, if Jesus was just interested in compassionate ministry to this woman, he wouldn't have gone to the extreme that he did in calling to attention to her deeper issues. And I say that because in verse 34, he says to her, after she'd been healed, he says, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." That word "well" there is the word that the Bible normally uses to describe somebody who has been saved. It's the Greek word there, saved. And Jesus is wanting this woman to know that her faith in him was able to do much more than just heal her physically, but was able to heal her spiritually. And for that reason, she was able to go in peace. And had Jesus not corrected her, she would have gone away thinking, "You know what? I was right. If I just touched his clothing, I'd be made well." And word could have gone around, "You know what? Just look for his clothing, because there's power in his clothing." And there are many people today who go on, you know, spiritual pilgrimages, shall we say, thinking that if I just go on this pilgrimage, then something will happen in my life. And Jesus called attention to her and wanted her to know that it wasn't Jesus' clothing that healed her. It was Jesus himself. Peter, in 2 Peter chapter 1, Peter tells us that grace and peace are multiplied to us in a knowledge, NASB says, in a true knowledge of Jesus Christ. Paul says to the Colossians in Colossians chapter 2 that he wants the believers who he's never met in person, he says, he wants their hearts to be encouraged, and he wants their hearts to be encouraged by knowing what are the riches that come from the full assurance of knowing Christ, of knowing who he is and knowing what he's done for them. Jesus isn't just interested in compassionate ministry. Jesus was interested in making sure that this woman understood who he was. Paul says in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 16, doctrine matters, because he exhorted Timothy to make sure that his doctrine was correct as he was teaching people, because by it he was able to save people and himself. Jesus' ministry was compassionate, but it was focused on knowing him. And as I said, we are living in a day and age that we as Christians are being overwhelmed by the various needs around us. But we dare not forget the greatest need that people have, and that is that they are spiritually, they are cut off from a holy God. I remember reading in an article, Christianity Today, many years ago, by a man called John Green. And he is the founder of Emmaus Ministries in Chicago. And it's a ministry that is geared to reaching men who are caught up in the homosexual prostitution And so this is a man who ministers to their physical needs. He provides place of housing for them. He provides income for them. He does all kinds of compassionate ministry to these people, helping them to get out of their the trade or whatever you want to call it. But what startled me was he made this statement, and he said, "We do violence to the poor if we don't share the gospel with them." And Jesus, knowing the overwhelming physical need, emotional need, financial need that this woman had, knew that just healing her physically wasn't enough. He also needed to deal with her heart, and that she needed to know the peace of God in her life. Well, finally, here, Jesus' ministry, it's unhurried, but it is steadfastly driven. Jairus, we are told, was a ruler of the synagogue. We're not told which synagogue that he was a ruler of. Many think possibly Capernaum, and if it was Capernaum, it would have meant that he would have noticed, he would have heard Jesus casting out an unclean spirit out of a man in Mark chapter 1 when Jesus came to the synagogue at Capernaum and taught. It would have also meant that whether Jairus was present in Mark chapter 2, remember Mark chapter 2, the paralytic man, he's brought to the house by four friends. They dig through a hole, they lower him down, Jesus heals them. Whether Jairus was present or not, he certainly would have heard of that man. He probably would have seen that man at the synagogue being brought by his four friends. And so Jairus knew of Jesus. He had heard of his ministry. And as a ruler of the synagogue, at this point, his need is great. His daughter is dying, and Luke tells us that it's his only daughter, chapter 8, verse 42. That could possibly mean that it was his only child or just his only daughter. Either one is a possibility. And Jairus, loving his daughter, comes to Jesus, and interestingly, he bows at Jesus' feet. For Jairus, you know, as a religious leader, to bow at Jesus' feet took a tremendous cost in him, because religious leaders in his day were not for Jesus. They were definitely opposed to Jesus, mainly because Jesus had attracted larger crowds than they did. And so word would get out that no doubt that Jairus was one of them. And so this was had to count the cost for Jairus to go and do this. But he knew that Jesus was his only choice. And so he falls down at Jesus' feet, asking Jesus to come to his house. And amazingly, Jesus immediately comes and says, "Yep, I'm coming." And I say amazingly because, remember, Jesus was surrounded by a crowd of people. He was ministering. He had a crowd of people, and Jesus forsakes them all to come and to heal his 12-year-old daughter. And so they're on their way, and to Jairus' horror, he is interrupted by this woman who, in the providence of God, has been suffering for 12 long years, and Jesus delays his ministry long enough to minister to this woman. And no doubt, Jairus is running through his mind, "What in the world are you doing? We're in a hurry. She's had 12 years. What's another day? Let's get going. My daughter is dying," and on we can. All those things run through our minds. Those of us who are parents, we know what it's like when our kids are sick and it's an emergency. It's like, now. We need to get it taken care of now. And Jairus came to Jesus thinking that Jesus was only capable of healing his daughter. And what Jairus was to learn was that Jesus had far more power than just healing his daughter. And Jairus needed to know that, because as I said, the cost of what Jairus was to do was great. And as he got home, got back to the home, there the people were there, they were mocking him. And so it was through that trial that Jairus came to know and to see the greatness of who Jesus is. And recently in my devotions, I was reading through 2 Corinthians. And I love 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians is a great book because it's kind of a biography, shall we say, an autobiography on the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul, greatest missionary that the church has ever known. And so when you read through 2 Corinthians, it's the Apostle Paul who is sharing about his ministry and life, and he's having to defend himself because he's under the attack. And when you come to chapter 1, you read about the suffering that was going on, and in chapter 1, verse 8, he says that he was utterly burdened beyond strength, and that he despaired of life, and indeed he says that he felt the sentence of death himself. But interestingly, it was through those sufferings and through those difficulties that Paul learned the truths about God that enabled him to continue on. And he shares those truths in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, first of all, that God is the God of all comfort. And you see, it's when we are in the midst of trials that we experience God's comfort, that we learn, oh, God, you are the God of all comfort. And Paul says that he learned that God was the God of all comfort, and the reason why God enabled him to receive that comfort himself was so that he could pass on that comfort to others. And lastly, he also learned was that it was in the trials that he was forced to rely on not himself, but on God himself. You see, God uses those trials in our lives to help us and to force us to lean on him. George MacDonald, who he was a Scottish author of children's books in the 19th century, and he had a great influence on C.S. Lewis. From some of his writings, he appears that he may have been a universalist, but I like what he says in one of his books, and he says that man is in perfect faith who can come to God in the utter dearth of his feelings and desires without a glow or an aspiration, with the weight of low thoughts, failures, neglects, and wanderings, forgetfulness, and say to him, you are my refuge. And Jairus, the ruler of the synagogue, he experienced God as his refuge in the midst of the most difficult trial in his life. And it's possible that right now you feel like you are in difficult trials. James tells us that when we are in the midst of difficult trials, that he says that we can count it all joy when we are in various trials, because that's when the testing of our faith can produce steadfastness, and steadfastness can have its full effects, that we may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Let's pray. Father, thank you for your mercy to us. Thank you that you never give up on us. And thank you that even in the midst of difficult trials that we might be on, you are not satisfied just to minister to us compassionately, physically, but you want to minister to us spiritually also. Truth matters. And so thank you, Father, that you use your word to lead us to a deeper understanding of you so that we can experience your grace and your mercy in our lives. And so I thank you for that. Thank you also now for this opportunity that we get to gather around your table and that we get to experience your grace that you minister to us because of Jesus' death on the cross for us. Thank you that you welcome us to come to your table and that you welcome all believers to come to your table. In Jesus' name, amen.